We're on Daf Lamed Zayin Amid Beis, 8 lines down from the top. Amalei Abaye Lerova. We are positing a contradiction, Lechor, between two statements of Rabbi Akiva regarding Safek Mamon in the case of Gzela. Abaye asks Rova, Mi Omar Rabbi Akiva, how can we reconcile the statement of Rabbi Akiva in the Mishnah in Yevamos, where he disagrees with Rabbi Tarfon regarding a person who stole from one of five people, he doesn't know from whom he stole, and Rabbi Akiva says, Lo zo aderech, I reject your approach, Rabbi Tarfon, that he could just simply place the gzela in front of the five people and let them battle it out, which again we explain to mean, in Rav Safra's famous reference, Yaniach. And lo zo aderech motzi also mi de'avera. If he has this albatross of an avera hovering over his head of gzela, and he wants to rectify his gzela, the only way he could do it is to be absolutely certain and guarantee that he's returned the gzela to the nigzal. Ad shisham gzela chol chad v'chad. If he has five potential candidate nigzolim, then he's got to guarantee that each one of the five will receive the amount that was stolen in order to guarantee that he is completely clean and pure of holding on to anyone else's mamon of gzela. Alma, we see clearly that according to Rabbi Akiva, sveika, misveika mafkina mamona, that if we have a safek, despite the chazaka of the muksak, we have to take that money out of the cheskes hamuksak. V'lamrina, we don't say uki or okim mamona v'cheskas mare. If we have a safek, which in this case the gazlan has a safek vis-a-vis each one of these five candidates, until any of them or one of them prove that he was the true nigzal, we should say uki mamona v'cheskas mare. The burden of proof is on someone who wants to take out money from someone else's mukzakus. The gazlan is considered mukzak. And vis-a-vis each one of these potential nigzolim, he is facing a case of safek against his chazaka. Again, it's a little bit unclear here why the gazlan is called a muchzak in this case. Muchzak means I'm holding on to something, some property or possession that I claim to be my own. Here in this case, he's looking for the rightful owner of the object, just like in the case of an aveda, a person who finds a lost object. It's not considered a muhsak in the strict sense of the law. He's looking for its owner, and that's what the Torah obligates him to do. So too in the case of gzela, he's seeking out the owner, and one could therefore ostensibly argue that he's not considered a muhsak. The sugya in Masechta Yevamos has a case of someone who purchased something from one of five people, and he doesn't know from whom he purchased the object and to whom he has to pay for the purchase. And the Gemara assumes that according to Rabbi Akiva, in that case, likewise he has to pay to each one of them, each one of the potential sellers, to guarantee that he's paid back the seller for what he bought. And it's interesting because the language of Rabbi Akiva is, quote, Ad shisham gzeil cholechad lahotzio midei avera. In the case of a mekach, of a sale, a purchase, there was no avera. So why would Rabbi Akiva, in that case, say that he's got to return the money to each one of the five candidate lochim? It's not an avera on his part. And lechora, what you're going to have to say is that although he didn't do an act of avera, but as long as he's holding on to the money that he has to pay to the seller, it's mamono shel chavercha biyadcha, that itself is an avera. So if I purchase something and I didn't pay for it, that too is considered an avera. To return to Abai's question, who are many Abai finds a stira from a Mishnah in Bava Basra, and there the case is of Nafal Habayis Olaf V'al Imo. There's a battle here amongst the Yorshim as to what happens to the mother's property when she was unfortunately killed by this avalanche, the collapse of the house. We don't know in this case who died first. Did the mother die first, or did her son die first? And the nafkamina is that if the mother died first, then her possessions through the law of Yerusha transfer to her son. And now that her son has passed on, then his heirs, the Yarshia ben, will now not only inherit their father, but they'll inherit their grandmother, Olav al Imo. But if, on the other hand, the son died first in this avalanche, in this collapse, then the son never was zoche to inherit his mother's nechassim, and therefore, in this case, the mother's nechassim go to the Yorshia Aim, the relatives of the mother. So there are certain relatives of the mother, let's say from a previous marriage, who are claiming the possessions of this woman, and if indeed the son died first, then the mother and her possessions go to the Yarshia Aim, her Yarshia. So we don't know who really has rights to this Yerusha. Yarshia ben Omrim, Ha'em Mesa Rishona. They, the Yarshim of the son, would like to claim that she died first, and therefore they have rights, as we said before, not only to his possessions through Yerusha, but also to hers. But Yarshia Aim Omrim, they claim Ha'ben Mes Rishon, that it was the son who died first, and therefore he never was alive to inherit his mother's nechassim, and therefore his mother's nechassim go to her relatives. Is Elu V'Elu Modim Shiachloku? The Elu V'Elu here is a reference to Beis Hillel and Beit Shammai. In Bava Basra they have machlokes about the case where a house collapses on two people. We don't know which one died first, and if we don't know what to do with the Yerusha. Beit Shammai of the opinion that they split the Yerusha, and Beis Hillel's of the opinion that Ma'amidim es hanechasim b'chezkasam. Whoever has the possession over the nechasim, he's the one who's going to be muchsak and amotzi mechal of harayah. In our case, modim, everybody agrees, siach loku, even Beis Hillel would agree that we should split the Yarshim, I'm sorry, split the Yerusha, and the Yarshia Aim will get half, the Yarshia Ben will get the other half, because they both claim with equal tinus. Nobody really knows who inherited the mother's possessions, and it's Momen Amuta B'Safek. When we have an objective Safek in Mamon, then Yachloku, we split it between the two. The Omer Rabbi Akiva, Moda Ani Bazu, Shanechasim B'Chezkasam. Rashi writes, Afal Pishani Mishel Beit Shammai, which can be interpreted in one of two ways. Either it could mean that Rabbi Akiva is considered a Talmud of Beit Shammai, or more likely, the way Tosus interprets it, Dima Maskel Moda, Rabbi Akiva is not a Talmud of Beit Shammai, but in this particular context, he was on the same page as Beit Shammai, and in the din of Safek Yerusha, he holds Yachloku like Beit Shammai. But in this case, says Rabbi Akiva, even though I am with Beit Shammai, I maintain the halacha of Hanechasim B'Chezkasam. Now again, it's not clear who's muhsak here. Is the Chezkas Yorshia Aim? Is the Chezkas Yorshia Ben? That's the sugya of the Gemara over there in Masechta Yevamos. But be that as it may, we see clearly that according to Rabbi Akiva, in this case of Safek Mamon, we have to leave the mum in Bechezkasa, Bechezkas Bailov. Whoever has the Chazaka, that's where we leave it. And Rabbi Akiva, in the case of Gzela, says that he has to pay all five people as we are Motzi Mamon Mi Chezkasa. So what's the sheet of Rabbi Akiva? We see here, says Abai, an inconsistency, a contradiction between Rabbi Akiva here and Rabbi Akiva there on the very same issue of Uki Mamona Bechezkasa. What do we do in a case of Safek? Do we apply the law of Chazaka and we leave the money in the Chezkas HaMuchzak? And that would be the case of Yosheim and Yoshe Abal. I'm sorry, Yosheim and Yoshe Aben. Or do we say, as Rabbi Akiva would have it in the case of the Gazlan, that despite the fact that each one of the potential candidate in Gzolim is only a Safek, nevertheless he's got to pay up all five people. So we see that we're not going to say Uki Mamona Bechezkas More Bechezkaso. Amalei, Rava said to Rabbi to Abaye, there is a fundamental distinction between the two cases. Hasam in the case of Yerusha, Shema, Veshema, whether it's the Yorshe Ha'em or the Yorshe Ha'ben, they both come forward with the Taina Shema. None of them are certain as to who died first, and none of them have a Vaday, a certain claim. But in the case of Gazal Echad Mechamisha, there it's Bari Veshema. There, although the Gazlan doesn't know from whom he stole, the victim of the theft, that means the Nigzal, he himself knows with a tiny Bari, a certainty, that his possessions were stolen from him. And therefore, when he comes forward and he claims that object with a tiny Bari against or from the Gazlan, the Gazlan has only a Taina Shema, we're going to apply the principle of Bari V'Shema, Bari Adif, and therefore, with regard to each one of these five potential Nigzolim who come forward, if each one does, with a Taina Bari that you stole from me, Rabbi Akiva is going to say, well, since the Gazlan can't stand up in front of any, you know, either of these, or any of these Tovin with a Tainas Bari, but rather all he has is a Tainas Shevi, doesn't know from whom he stole, is Bari Veshevi Bari Adif. He's got to pay each one of them. That has nothing to do with the case of Yorshia Ben Yorshia Aim, where each one is a Tainas Shema. And when is a Tainas Shema, then Shema versus Shema is we're going to have to go back to the Chazaka and say Uki Mamona Bechazaske. But in the case of a Bari V'Shem, a Bari is Adif, and therefore it's powerful enough to be Motzi Mamon, Mi Chezkaso. Now the stira that the Gemara presented makes sense only if you assume that Rabbi Akiva, in the case of obligating the person to pay each one of them, is not limited to the case of Gzela, where the Gazan doesn't know from whom he stole, but even in the case of Mekach, where the buyer doesn't know from whom he purchased and whom he has to pay, who is the Mocher? Because if we were to limit Rabbi Akiva to the case of Gzela, that's a unique case because of Eina Motzio So Midei Avera. And that is no connection or analogy to the case of Yorshe Ha'em and Yorshe Ha'ben. That analogy will only make sense if we assume that Rabbi Akiva's principle of paying each one of them only applies not only in the case of Avera of Gazlan, but even in the case of Mekach. Now, Lechora, when the Gemara answers here that Rabbi Akiva, in the case of Gzela, is facing a situation of Bari Veshema, as opposed to who died first in the Yorshe Ha'em, Yorshe Ha'ben, is the Gemara activating the universal principle of Bari Veshema, Bari Adif, which is a gigantic machlokes in Bava Kama Kuf Yud Ches, says Tosus, no. This is not equal to the classical Bari V'Shema issue, because even if I maintain that Bari V'Shema Lav Bari Adif, here Rabbi Akiva will maintain that Bari is Adif. What's the difference between the two? And the answer is that if Reuven is being Tovea Shimon, and Shimon has nothing more than a Taina Shema, in that case, I could still maintain that Shimon is Patur, he doesn't have to pay, because maybe he's not Chayev, and he has a Chazaka to support that claim, is Uki Mamona Beches Kasei, and Bar V'Shem Allah Bar Yod. But here, this is a different case, because there's definitely a Chiyuv. If you come to me, or Reuven comes to Shimon and he says, you owe me money, well, Shimon doesn't know if there was ever a chiv to begin with. Maybe he never borrowed any money. Here, there's clearly a chiv to somebody. There's a cheskas chiv, which undermines the cheskas tfisa on the money or on the object, because he knows that he stole it from somebody. And if he knows he stole it from somebody, then Bar V'Shema Bari Adif. And this is very similar to the kasha of the Pnei Yoshua and Rav Shimon Shkop. In the case of Aveda, we say that the finder doesn't give back the Aveda to someone who comes and claims it unless that person has Simonim. But without Simonim, he doesn't return it to him. And the question is, why not? If you hold that Bari V'Shema Bari Adif, that should be enough to return the object to whoever comes and claims it. Unless the Torah is saying, Tarshev Shalaya Rama, because the Torah is saying that, you know what, today Reuven is coming to say with a Tainus Bari that he lost that object. Tomorrow Shimon is going to come and claim that he lost that object. And therefore, Bari V'Shema will not kick in, and the Torah is going to require Tarshev Shalaya Rama that he supports his Tainus Bari with some sort of objective evidence, like Simonim, if you hold Simonim Doraiso, or Simonim Dorabanan, or Edim, and so forth and so on. But the only point I wanted to make is that, just like in the Motzi Aveda, it's very possible that even if I hold Bari V'Shema as a general rule, Lav Bari Adif, but in this case of an Aveda, Bari should be Adif, if not for the special requirement of Darshei Shalaya Ramai. Why would Bari be Adif in this case? And the answer is because the finder, the Motzi, is not claiming the object for himself. He admits that it wasn't his. And so too, in the case of the Gazlan, he's admitting that it wasn't his. And therefore, he definitely has a cheskas chiyuv to return that gzela to its proper owner. And therefore, if somebody comes along and says, that's my object, you stole it from me, Bari V'Shema, Bari Adif, even if in general, universally, Lav Bari Adif. In the case of Halva, where the so-called Lova says, I don't know if I borrowed money from you, he doesn't have to pay up, Uki Mamon V'Ches Kasei, because Bari V'Shema, Lav Bari Adif, and that's because there's no absolute knowledge, a certain knowledge of a Chiyuv, to begin with. Now the Gemara says the following. Just one second. So again, Rava responds to Abai's Kashin saying there's no stira. Gzela is different because in Gzela we have a Bari V'Shema situation, Mashen Ken in the Yerusha. It's a case of Shema V'Shema. So the Gemara now goes back to our Mishnah. V'masnisin d'hocha, in our Mishnah it says the following, Omar l'shnayim, gazalti l'echad mikem mana. In other words, it was the initiative of the Gazlan to say, I stole, from either Reuven or Shimon. Now, Reuven and Shimon did not come forward with their claim, so apparently they don't know whether or not their object was stolen. The Gazlan himself doesn't know. Shema V'Shema Hu, it's a case where both the Tovea and the Nitba are both Shema, and yet V'Katani Nosin L'Zemana V'L'Zemana, that he's got to return, and presumably this is Rabbi Akiva speaking here, he's the anonymous author of this Mishnah, that the Gazan has to return it to both of them. both to Shimon and to Levi. And even though this is a Shema v'Shema situation, nevertheless, we're not going to say Uki Mamona b'Cheskaso. And therefore, we go back to our original question about Rabbi Akiva in the case of Safek Yerusha, where Rabbi Akiva insists that we leave the Yerusha in its Chazaka. Why do we do so? In a case of Safek, then the Chazaka is not significant. We see that clearly from our Mishnah of Gzela, where the case of Safek, which is a case of Safek vis-a-vis each one of the potential claimants or nigzolim, we're not going to say uki mamona b'cheskas mare, let the gazlan maintain his possession over the money, but rather we're going to force the gazlan to pay each and every one of them, despite the fact that Shema v'Shema, you just established, Rava, that Rabbi Akiva is based on Bari v'Shema, and yet clearly the language of the Mishnah indicates that it's Shema v'Shema. So the Gemara says, we might the Rabbi Akiva, who says that this Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Akiva. And the Mishnah says that he has to pay each one of them based on Rabbi Akiva's principle, which is a Bari V'Shema principle, which we saw in Masechta Yevamos. Here in the Mishnah, we're talking about Shema V'Shema. What kind of halacha is this that nosin lezemana v'lezemana? And the answer is that this Mishnah is dealing not with the question of din, strict law and justice. According to Jewish law and justice, there's no reason in the world why the gazlan should have to pay up both of them. After all, it's a shema v'shema, and therefore uki mamon b'cheskas b'cheskase. But rather, we're dealing in our mission with the case of someone who wants to be Yotzi Midei Shamayim. He wants to be absolutely sure and convinced that there will be no punishment here for the gzela that he did. And therefore, if we're not dealing with Dini Adam, it makes sense that the Mishnah would require no saying lezemana v'lezemana. And that's not a steer to Rabbi Akiva. And Dini Adam, according to the law of Bezdin, Rabbi Akiva admits that we don't take Mamon out of its chazaka b'safek unless we have a Bari V'Shema situation. But if it's Shema V'Shema, leave the money exactly where it is in the hands of the Muchzak. Our Mishnah, which establishes that he has to pay each individual, that's not based on Shema V'Shema. That's based on halacha of Lotzeis Yedei Shamayim. So even though it's a Shema situation, therefore there's no reason to say that he has to pay each one of them, but that's the only way out if he wants to be Yotzei Midin Shamayim and protect himself from any sort of a punishment. So right now what we have is a problem. Of course, we don't understand the question that you were asking. You're asking, well, in Shema V'Shema, why does Rabbi Akiva say no sin lezemana, lo sin lezemana? The answer is because that's not based on Dini Adam, on strict law. That's not based on the claim of the Nigzal, because at the end of the day, it's Shema V'Shema. And in truth, Mikra Adin, Rabbi Akiva would apply the principle of Chazaka, that we don't take money out of its possession, out of its Chazaka, unless we have clear-cut evidence to do so. But in a Suffolk, we don't do that. The Mishnah says that in Shema V'Shema, he's got to pay each one of them. That's a different halacha. That's Bolotzei Sidei Shemaim. So I don't understand, says the Gemara, why did you raise this objection and this stira in Rabbi Akiva? It's not a stira in Rabbi Akiva. Enochinami, strictly speaking, Shema V'Shema, we would say Uki Mamona B'Cheskas More, and that's what Rabbi Akiva insisted in the case of Yorshe Aim, Yorshe Ben. You'll ask about the Mishnah. The Mishnah is a different halacha. The Mishnah is halacha of Bolot Seis Yedei Shemaim. If he wants to guarantee himself protection against the Din Shemaim, he's got to pay each and every one. So the Gemara answers, the Katoni Aloda He, because we have a Braisa that embellishes the Mishnah in Yevamos, where the Machlok Shem Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon is presented in the case of a man who stole from five people, and we don't know, he doesn't know from which one of the five he stole, is Moda Rabbi Tarfon, it says in the Braisa, the Omer L'Shnayim Gazalti L'Echad Mikem Mona, V'Eini Odeh Eiz Mikem, is Mishalim V'Kol Echad V'Echad. Even Rabbi Tarfon agrees that if a man stole from one of two people, he doesn't know which one he stole from, he has to pay each one of them. Gemara understands that what this Braisa means by Moda Rabbi Tarfon is that Rabbi Tarfon is Moda to Rabbi Akiva, who's the Bar Plukta of Rabbi Tarfon. And in what sense is he Moda? Rabbi Akiva said that Mi'ikra Din Bedini Odom, he has to pay back to each one of these potential Nigzolim. But in the case, and that's even in the case of Shema V'Shema, but Rabbi Tarfon says, I'm Moda to you that he would have to pay each one of the Nigzolim under the law of Bedine Shamayim. Notice, I disagree with you, Rabbi Akiva, in Dini Adam. My opinion is, Meiniach, it's like Zeila B'neim Mistalik, I put the Zeila and let them fight it out. But I'm Moda to you, Rabbi Akiva, that if he wants to clear himself B'din Shamayim, he's got to pay each one of them. Rabbi Akiva, you went a step further, and that's where I didn't tolerate your Shita, and you said that you have to pay each one of them B'dini Adam. And that's why we're left with this Stira and Rabbi Akiva. Because why would Rabbi Akiva say that you pay each one of them when in the case of Safek we say leave the money b'cheskoso, so the Gazan should not have to pay each one of them b'dini adam? So it's clear again, b'din shamayim, nobody argues he's got to pay each one of them, but b'dini adam, why would Rabbi Akiva say you have to pay each one of them? Why not say uki mamona b'cheskoso like he said in the case of Yerusha? Ella, what you can answer me, that we're talking about a case of Bari V'Shem and Bari Adif. Yeah, that's impossible. Why? Because this Braisa and this Mishnah is talking about Shema V'Shema. And if it's Shema V'Shema, Rabbi Akiva's consistent view should have been Uki Mamona B'Chez Kasei. Why does he say have to pay each one of them? The Gemara asks, Umimai the Shema V'Shema, who told you that Rabbi Akiva's case of Gzela, where Rabbi Akiva's Mechayiv to pay each one of them, is Shema V'Shema, which is the basis of your stira, the question that you're positing? And the Gemara answers, Chada Midalo Katani Tovim Oso. Usually, when we're talking about a Tainas Bari, it should say Tovim Oso. Here it just says, Omer L'Shnayim Gazalti L'Yechad Mikem. Doesn't say Tovim in any viod. And furthermore, Haditani Rabbi Chia. We have a Braisa which has the same din of the Mishnah. And there the language is clear. It says, Gazalti Echad Mikem V'Eini Odeh Ezu Ze Omer Eini Odeh V'Ze Omer Eini Odeh. Rabbi Akiva is quoted as saying that he has to pay back to each one of them, even though each one of them has a tiny shema, he doesn't know. So we see that the din of the Mishnah, which is the same as the din of Rabbi Chiya and the Braisa, is that even though each one of them, of the potential Nigzolim, is saying any Odea, nevertheless, Rabbi Akiva forces, he compels the Gazan to pay each one of them. And we're not talking about Din Shamayim, because that's not the subject of any debate between Rabbi Tarfon and Rabbi Akiva. Kuli Amalo plea that B'din Shamayim would have to pay each one of them, but rather Rabbi Akiva is saying B'dini Adam. So the Gemara now goes back and insists, Ha'u Kimna La, we've already established, B'bal Lotes Yedei Shamayim. When does Rabbi Akiva require that you pay each one of them? That's the case of Baal Lotzeis B'din Shamayim B'din Yodam, he's part of Mishalmi, it's a Shema V'Shema situation, there's no Bari V'Shema, and therefore we've already answered now this so-called contradiction, we've reconciled this contradiction between the two statements of Rabbi Akiva. It's true that on the one hand, Bari V'Shema, Rabbi Akiva holds Motzim Mamim Miches Koso, in Shema V'Shema Mi'ikar Adin B'din Yodam Lomotziyamamimcheskoso. That's why in Safed Yerusha, it's a Shema V'Shema. Rabbi Akiva holds that we leave the Nechasim in the their Chazaka. But in the case of Baal Lotzeis Yedei Shamayim, then we're going to say instead of of Uki Mamona Becheskaso, we're going to say that he has to pay each one of them in order to guarantee that he won't be punished b'din shamayim. Now at this point, at the end of Lamed Zayin Amid Beis, the Gemara goes back to what we saw on Amid Aleph in Rava, that if the Nifkad receives two pigdonos in two different krichos, and he doesn't remember how much each one gave him, and each one of the mafkidim is suing him for the more expensive pikadon, he's got to pay each one of them kishir apikadon agadol. You'll see Olam and Zayin of an Aleph, one line and change before the wide lines. And we're talking about a case where, let's say, Shimon was mafkid either Amona or Masayim in the hands of Ruvain Levi the same. And in that case, the halacha is that Ruvain is going to have to pay the full Masayim to both of them. This apparently would seem to be a contradiction to another din that Rava maintained. Amalei Ravina l'Ravashi, Umi Amar Rava, Kol b'shtei krichos havilei l'medak, that if these two mafkidim came separately, each one with his bag of money, then the responsibility falls on the shoulders of the nifkad, of the shomer, to be careful and know to whom he has to return what sum of money. Is it Shimon who gave him the 200 zuz? Is it Levi who gave him the 200 zuz? If he, the shomer, the nifkad, is not careful, he's not meticulous about writing down on each bag, who gave that bag, then he's got to pay each one of them. Va'amar Rava, but Rava made a different statement. Be'itema Rav Papa. Others say it was Rav Papa who made the statement. Hakol modim b'shnayim shefkidu eitzel roeh. What does this mean, Hakol? Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon, who had a machlokes with regard to a person who has in his flock two calves, two agolim. One of them is a bechor, but he doesn't know which of the two is a bechor. When one of them dies, and he doesn't know if the bechor died or the one that came subsequently and is not a bechor died. So do we divide between the Bailam and the Kohen, that egel that still remains alive, or should we say Amotzi Michavel of Araya? And it says there that Modim Bishnaim Shefkidu Eitzel Roeh, both Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Tarfon agree in the case of a professional shomer, a Roeh, a shepherd of cows, of calves in this case. Akol Modim B'shnayim shefkidu etzol roeh sheminiach roeh b'neim mistalek. There's no machlokes about the case of two individuals who left their, you know, small animals, the tle, the lamb, in the hands of a roeh, and one of them gave one tle, the other gave two tleim. And now when they both come to pick up their tloim, each one claims he gave two tloim. Is in this case, you give each one of the two a tle, and the third tle, you meniach roa b'neim umistalik. He doesn't have to return two tloim to each one of them. And even though you might claim the roeh was negligent, he should have remembered and taken note of which one of these two mafkidim gave him two tloim and which one gave him only one. And therefore we would definitely argue that if he doesn't remember, that's his negligence. And it becomes like the case of pikadon that he received in shtei krichos. And therefore, why is it that in the case of shtei krichos, there's no obligation to pay each one of them? In the case of pikadon, where he's mekabel shtei krichos, he doesn't have to pay both of them shtei krichos, according to the universal law of uki mamonu cheskas mari, but because of the knas that the shomer was guilty of not taking note of who gave him the higher amount or the more expensive utensil, therefore he has to pay both of them. And yet here, according to Rava, there's no machlokas, and even everybody would agree, even Rabbi Akiva would agree, meiniach ro'a b'neim u'mistalek. He doesn't have to give two tlum to each one. Why is that different than the case of Pikadon, where if he receives it from two krichos, he has to guarantee that the bala Pikadon is paid back? Amolei hasam, in the case of Roa, kishe hifkidu b'edro shel Roa shalomidaito. This was a case where the Roa never saw the tloim, he never saw these lambs from the get-go, when they were placed and deposited in his possession, because it was shalomidaito, and therefore there's no claim here that he was negligent. How come he didn't know who gave him two tloim, who gave one tla? And therefore he doesn't have to pay two tloim to each one of them. But in the case of afkidim, where they came to shtei krichos, the nifkad, the shomer, has to be very careful that he notes and even writes on the object that this was given to me by so and so. So because by virtue of that negligence, as we said, in like in the case of Gzela, he doesn't know from whom he stole. Here, from the case of a nifkad, where he doesn't know who was the mafkid, he's got to pay l'chol echad v'echad. And Rabbi Akiva then is perfectly consistent. Mishnah says, "V'chein shnei kelim echad yofa mona v'echad yofa elav zuz utzricha." The Gemara says, "L'chora, this is a repeat performance. We've already seen that if two people are mafkid, one is mafkid a mona, and the other is mafkid a 200 masayim, and the halacha is each one a mana, and the third mana is ye munach, and that's exactly the case here in Kalim." So the Gemara answers, "The iash me'inon hach kamaisa." If we only had the first din, which is the case of a pikadon of a mana and a pikadon masayim, we would have thought, "Bahi ka'ami rabbanon." That's where the rabbanon say, you know, give each one a mana, and the third one is ye munach mishum deleka pseida. Aval hacha di ikab seida de gadol ema modulei le Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara says the following: that in the case of the two pikdonos, one gave him a mana, one gave him a sayim, and the rabbanon say that he has to give each one a mana, the third is ye munach. That's because there's no pseida, which means that ein hefsid li echem hem bi'osam shtei manim shanu cholkim. We certainly, by returning a mana to each one of them, they don't suffer any loss with regard to each of these manim, because each one got back his mana, his 100 zuz that he gave, that he deposited. Aval baha, in the case of two kelim, the ikab say to the gadol, if you want to give a shear, the amount of dmei katan, to one of these two litigants, then you're going to have to break the kli, and we saw already in Rashi that seems to be indicated literally that you break the kli. So that's going to be a hefsei to the bala kli. I'm talking about the kli agadol. You're going to break the kli agadol in order to give him back, you know, his chelek. That's a tremendous hefsei. Is aim on my thing modulei the Rabbi Yossi? Here the Chacham would agree to Rabbi Yossi that we should say hakol yei munach atchiyov eliyahu velo nafsid is bala kli agadol. We don't know who is the owner of the kli agadol, but we know that by breaking the kli, we're causing him a hefsed. The logic of the Chachamim against Rabbi Yossi only applies when we're giving back to each one of them that which is definitely theirs at no loss. But if we're going to give back to each one of them at a definite loss because the Kli Agadol has to be broken into pieces, then you might as well accept the sheet of Rav Yossi and apply the principle of Yemunach on the entire sum of money. We don't want to give out, you know, less than what's coming to him and causing him a hefsed. And now the Gemara turns it the other way around. He itmar beha. If we only had the mission in the case of Kalim and not in the case of Mos, I would have thought beha kamar Rav Yossi. That's where Rav Yossi says, let's take the whole kit and caboodle and apply the principle of Yemunach. And that's because there's a hefsed in Shviras HaKli. So if the Kalim was only the question here, we would say that's where Rav Yossi insists that Yemunach, because otherwise there'll be a hefsed HaKli. Aval Bahach, in the case of Pikadon, Eimim Odulu L'Rabbanon, there's a certain compelling and attractive logic to the Rabbanon to say give each one a mana. He's not losing anything on that. Sricha, and therefore we need the Tana to tell us both cases, in both directions. Again, if it only had the case of mana, we would say in the Kliya Gadol case, the Shnei Kalim, there the Rabbana would agree, admit to Rav Yossi that Yemunach, we don't want to be mafsid each one of them. And if the Mishnah would have only told us the din of Kalim, then we would have assumed that's where Rav Yossi says HaKol Yemunach. He doesn't want to create a hefsi by breaking the Kli HaGadol. But in the case of Pikad and Shalmos, maybe the Rabbanan would agree that we should give each one a mana. I'm sorry, maybe Rav Yossi would agree to the Chachamim that we should give each one a mana because there's no hefsi, and only on the mana, on the shlishi, that's where we should apply Yemunach Tzricha. Therefore, the Tana had to teach us the dinim of both Mos and Kalim. Now the Gemara says, is it really possible to say that there's a chiluk in the framework of Rabbi Yossi Shita between a pikkun of Kalim and a pikkun of Mos? What time of the Rabbi Yossi mishum hefsed aramayhu? What motivates Rabbi Yossi to apply the principle of Yemunach? That's the fact that he wants to motivate, he wants to put the burden on the Ramai and attract him to a position in which he'll be Moda. The Yisod, the Evan Pina, so to speak, the foundation of Rabbi Yossi's Yemunach is to create a Hefsed for the Ramai and to impose a Knas on the Ramai in order to bring him forward and squeeze out a confession of his so that he shouldn't suffer this loss. In that context, there's no logic or rhyme or reason to differentiate between a Kli and Mos. Ella, therefore, the Gemara changes its mind from the original Teretz, and the Gemara says, Travayu l'Rabbanon itztrich. We need both the case of Mos and the case of Kalim for the Rabbanon, but not for Rabbi Yossi. As far as Rabbi Yossi is concerned, you know, choose your case, either Mos or Kalim, and we're going to extend it to the reverse, to the other case. We don't. That doesn't justify it. But within the Rabbanan's frame of reference, if we would have had this din only in the case of Mos, we wouldn't have known what would the Rabbanan say in Kalim, where there's a hefsed b'shviras hakli. He'll ask the following question: why didn't the Mishnah suffice by telling me the case of Shnei Kalim? You didn't have to present the ration in the case of Mos. Obviously, if the Chacham are willing to say, let's break the Kli in order to give each one what is definitely due to him, then how much more so in the case of the ration of Mos, of a Bikon Shel Mos, where this one gave him 200 and this one gave him 100, certainly he's got to give 100 to each one of them. And the answer has to be Lozu Afzu Ketani. This is one of the literary rules that we apply to understanding a Mishnah. And this is the Derech HaTana, that sometimes he tells us one din and afterwards a second din. When the second din is more Mechudosh than the first din, there's more of a Chidush in the second din. That's called Lozu, but Afzu, and even in this case, even though you can definitely derive the first case from the second case, but the way that it's presented by the Tana is to go first for the simple case and then tell us the more complicated case. So again, we could have derived the din according to the Chachamim, of Pikaron Shel Mos, from the din of Pikaron Shel Kalim, but nevertheless, the way that the Tana generally presents his literature is in a lozu afsue, not only in the case of Mos, of Pikaron Mos, is the din, that we give each one a mana in order to guarantee that we return that which we know definitely belongs to each one of these two litigants. But even in the case of Pikadon, where there's an extra dimension here of Hefseid, nevertheless the Chachamim say we're going to take the Kli Gadol and break it in order to guarantee that each one of these two Mafkidim will get at least the minimum that we know for sure he gets. And even though this Chalukah is going to cause a hefsed of the Kli Gadol, the Chiddush is that nevertheless the Chachamim insist on setting up this kind of quasi yachloka where each mafkid gets that which is definitely his, and only on the third part, the extra part, do we say Yehei Munah.